All right, I remembered the other announcement that I couldn't remember earlier. We have talked often about how our focus here is on serving the community, and we want to try to find more ways to encourage you all and to help you all get engaged in serving the community in whatever capacity you might feel led. And oftentimes, that's easier to do in a group than on your own. And so this fall, we want to try out something a little bit different with small groups for those of you that might be interested in trying this out. Rather than have you meet every week and just kind of sit around and talk, which there's nothing wrong with, right? But we want to get out and do. And so we're going to try groups that meet twice a month. The first meeting of the month will be just to be together as a group, to have a meal together, and to plan a service project together. And then the second time that you're together during that month will be to go out and execute the project that you've planned. So just two meetings a month, one to gather together, have a meal together, and plan something, and then the second time to go out and do it. So we'll talk more about that as we get more into August, but we're working on implementing those come this fall, all right? Okay, so we turn today, we begin our study of 1 Samuel. So we turn here, and we kind of saw this last week in that introductory video that I shared with you. You know, we pick up here at 1 Samuel from where Judges left off. You know, in Judges 21:25, the last verse of that book, we read, "In those days there was no king in Israel. Everyone did what was right in his own eyes." And so you had this kind of loosely connected group of tribes that nobody was really in charge of, and there was a lot of chaos, as this verse in Judges reminds us of. And of course, what we see in 1 Samuel is this transition into, rather than a group of tribes, into a single nation, and a nation that is organized and that is led, led by leaders, of course. And that, more than anything else, is what 1 Samuel is about. It's about these three leaders, Samuel, Saul, and David. You know, leadership is important, right? I'm reminded of a story by Stuart Briscoe. How many of you familiar with the name Stuart Briscoe, a preacher? Great preacher. I forget where he's at. I think he's over in Ohio. Believe he's either near retirement or has retired. But anyway, he told a story one time about leadership. He was familiar with a young pastor who was doing a funeral of, as it turns out, a serviceman. He'd been in the army and passed away. And so a group of his friends wanted to honor him, and so they asked the pastor if the pastor would lead them in kind of a procession down the middle of the aisle, and if they could pause at the casket and then kind of march ceremonially out the side door. And the pastor said, yeah, that'd be fine. And so day of the service comes, and they march in with their uniforms on behind the pastor, and they get to the casket and pause for a moment, and then they march ceremoniously out, except that there was a little problem. They marched very regally into the broom closet because the pastor chose the wrong door. Then they had to, of course, beat a hasty retreat in view of all of the mourners that were there. And so it's kind of a reminder about leadership. You know, if you're going to be a leader, make sure you know where you're going, right? And if you're going to follow someone who's leading, make sure they know what they're doing. For our purposes, and those are good questions to remember, but as we turn to 1 Samuel, and as we go through this whole study, I kind of want you to keep in mind and just reflect on these three big questions about leadership. First of all, what does it take to make a godly leader? Secondly, who is leading you? And third, who are you leading? Because, you see, we're all being led by someone, and in turn, we're leading someone. And so, come back to that first question and the importance of that question. How is it that godly leaders are made? And that's where we begin our study this morning in 1 Samuel. How is it that godly leaders are made? You know, there's no shortage of opinions about leadership in our world today, right? I mean, all you have to do is go to the bookstore or look online at Amazon, search under the topic leadership. Thousands maybe hundreds of thousands of books on leadership, right? There's even a magazine in ministry circles called simply Leadership. We think that leadership is important, and so everybody has an opinion about what it takes to make a good leader. We're even having, and this isn't anything that we have to do with, it's just someone who came and asked to use our facility, as it so happens tomorrow night. There's an event here in the coffee shop about leadership. It's a big topic. So what is it that 1 Samuel tells us about what it takes to make a leader? Well, let's read, and this is, you know, as we get into these narratives, sometimes we take small pieces, other times we take big pieces. I think it's good for us just to read through the entire first chapter here. So read along with me or just listen along. A little bit lengthy, but I think it's worth reading this entire chapter. So 1 Samuel chapter 1. There was a certain man of Ramathaim Zophim of the hill country of Ephraim, whose name was Elkanah, the son of Jeroham, son of Elihu, son of Tohu, son of Zuph, an Ephratite. He had two wives. The name of the one was Hannah, and the name of the other, Peninnah. And Peninnah had children, but Hannah had no children. Now this man used to go up year by year from his city to worship and to sacrifice to the Lord of hosts at Shiloh, where the two sons of Eli, Hophni and Phinehas, were priests of the Lord. On the day when Elkanah sacrificed, he would give portions to Peninnah his wife and to all her sons and daughters. But to Hannah he gave a double portion, because he loved her, though the Lord had closed her womb. And her rival used to provoke her grievously to irritate her, because the Lord had closed her womb. So it went on year by year, as often as she went up to the house of the Lord, she used to provoke her. Therefore Hannah wept and would not eat. And Elkanah her husband said to her, Hannah, why do you weep? And why do you not eat? And why is your heart sad? Am I not more to you than 10 sons? After they had eaten and drunk in Shiloh, Hannah rose. Now Eli the priest was sitting on the seat beside the doorpost of the temple of the Lord. She was deeply distressed and prayed to the Lord and wept bitterly. And she vowed a vow and said, O Lord of hosts, if you will indeed look on the affliction of your servant and remember me and not forget your servant, but will give to your servant a son, then I will give him to the Lord all the days of his life, and no razor shall touch his head. As she continued praying before the Lord, Eli observed her mouth. Hannah was speaking in her heart, only her lips moved, and her voice was not heard. Therefore Eli took her to be a drunken woman. And Eli said to her, How long will you go on being drunk? Put your wine away from you. But Hannah answered, No, my lord, I am a woman troubled in spirit. I have drunk neither wine nor strong drink, but I have been pouring out my soul before the Lord. Do not regard your servant as a worthless woman, for all along I have been speaking out of my great anxiety and vexation. Then Eli answered, Go in peace, and the God of Israel grant your petition that you have made to him. And she said, Let your servant find favor in your eyes. Then the woman went her way and ate, and her face was no longer sad. They rose early in the morning and worshipped before the Lord. Then they went back to the house of Ramah. And Elkanah knew Hannah his wife, and the Lord remembered her. And in due time Hannah conceived and bore a son, and she called his name Samuel, for she said, I have asked for him from the Lord. The man Elkanah and all his house went up to offer to the Lord the yearly sacrifice and to pay his vow. But Hannah did not go up, for she said to her husband, As soon as the child is weaned, I will bring him, so that he may appear in the presence of the Lord and dwell there forever. Elkanah, her husband, said to her, Do what seems best to you. Wait until you have weaned him. Only may the Lord establish his word. So the woman remained and nursed her son until she weaned him. And when she had weaned him, she took him up with her, along with a 3-year-old bull, an ephah of flour, and a skin of wine. And she brought him to the house of the Lord at Shiloh. And the child was young. Then they slaughtered the bull, and they brought the child to Eli. And she said to him, O my Lord, as you live, my Lord, I am the woman who is standing here in your presence, praying to the Lord. For this child I prayed, and the Lord has granted me my petition that I made to him. Therefore I have lent him to the Lord. As long as he lives, he has lent to the Lord. And he worshiped the Lord there. So, Samuel we're introduced to here as the child just born. And as we go through the book of 1 Samuel, we'll see, you know, oftentimes in these narratives, we see just a statement or a recitation of events that have occurred. sometimes we'll see commentary, either positive or negative commentary. And certainly what we see about Samuel is almost entirely positive. We're told that Samuel was a good leader. So how is it that he became such a good leader? Well, that's what this first chapter tells us about. And rather than give us principles, leadership guidance, things to study or examples to follow, what is it that this first chapter shows us about the formation of a leader? His mom and dad. It shows us, and this is kind of, I guess we would say, the first biblical principle of leadership. Leaders are made at home. Leaders are made at home. Now, this is kind of one of, as we've talked about, one of the foundations of Coffee House 5, our belief that the family, as we've said it, the family is the primary context for discipleship. And certainly, discipleship is about forming, making leaders. So we could easily say it this way, that the family is the primary context for the formation of leaders. Families are vitally important to forming leaders. A recent survey showed that among CEOs of major companies in this country, 92% of them came from a home that was intact with mom and dad present. 92%. And of course, that's even more staggering as you think about the number of single-parent homes that we have in this country today. Families are vitally important. We're reminded, of course, Paul, you remember how it is that he told the young pastor Timothy to choose leadership in the church. What did he tell him to look at? The family. He said, look at the man's home. You remember he said it this way, 1 Timothy 3, verses 4 and 5, speaking of how to choose an elder. He must manage his own household well, with all dignity, keeping his children submissive. For if someone does not know how to manage his own household, how will he care for God's church? And then over in chapter 5, verse 8, he kind of gives the one thing that will disqualify a man from leadership in the church. If anyone does not provide for his relatives, and especially for members of his household, he is denied the faith and is worse than an unbeliever. Paul's point, of course, is that you want to find a leader? Look in the home, because that's where leaders are made. And so as you think about, just, and again, we'll come back to these questions in more detail later, but as you think about those leaders that you follow and how it is that you choose someone to follow, the first question should be, what's this man's family like? Or what's this woman's family like? Because that will tell you something about the nature of this person as a leader. And then as you apply it to yourself, as you think about the people who are following you, what does your own home look like? Do you manage your home, as Paul talks about? Do you take care of your family? One of the key concepts of leadership and the way that we form leadership. So, as we think about that then, we keep in mind that it's Samuel's mom and dad that we focus on to see how a leader is made. Let's look at each of these then individually. We'll turn, first of all, to Samuel's dad, this man named Elkanah. Certainly we know that fathers, and we've heard this, I'm sure, many times, and certainly probably many times in the church, the importance of fathers to the upbringing of children. But what is it specifically that we learn here about this man, Elkanah, and that applies to building leaders? First of all, I think that a dad who builds leaders has a personal relationship with God. You see, first in verse 3, we're told that this man, Elkanah, used to go up year by year from his city to worship and to sacrifice to the Lord of hosts at Shiloh. Now, at this time, of course, the tabernacle was in this city called Shiloh, and the people of God had been called, the men specifically, had been called to gather for these annual festivals, three primary festivals of the Israelites. We think this one that's being referred to is probably the Feast of Tabernacles that occurred in the fall of the year. And we see that Elkanah did this. He took his family. It wasn't just him that went. He brought his family with him. And he worshiped. And so we know that Elkanah himself had this relationship with God, which is so vitally important, dads, to being able to lead your family. You know, I'm sure you've heard it many times. We talk about it a lot, that fathers are supposed to be the spiritual leaders of the home. And I certainly am faced with this oftentimes in counseling, where a couple comes in and what's the wife's complaint? Well, my husband's not a spiritual leader the way I want him to be. And I'll say this for myself, from personal experience, that puts a lot of pressure on us guys, right? You know, and how is it that we're supposed to do that? What does that look like to be a spiritual leader in the home? I mean, am I, you know, this people talk about, well, you got to pray with your family and you got to do devotionals and, you know, you got to do all this stuff. And it's like, wait a minute, I don't know how to do any of this stuff. How am I supposed to be a leader? Well, it isn't complicated, actually, when you think about it. I mean, what's one of the primary fundamental things about leadership? You can't lead people any further than where you've gone, right? And so if you're going to be a spiritual leader in your home, the first and most important thing about that is your own personal relationship with God. You have to focus, dads, husbands, on your own relationship with God. You have to make time for it. You have to put energy into it. You have to be concerned about it. And as you develop that personal relationship, your own relationship with God, guess what? The rest of it will kind of take care of itself. Because the kids, mom, will see your relationship and they'll follow where you go. I mean, we see this, again, statistics show this over and over. The most recent survey I saw along these lines is that if a mom is faithful to God and attends church, these days there's about a 15% likelihood that the kids will follow her in following God. But if dad has a relationship with God and attends church, do you know what that percentage is that the kids will follow along? About 75%. You know, I think, again, that's why, unfortunately, we see today so many young people who are either leaving the church or not in the church because their dads aren't in the church, because their dads don't have a relationship with God. This is where it all begins in terms of leadership. Dad has to have a relationship with God that he works on, that he focuses on, that is the most important thing in his life. Dads, husbands, is that what would describe you? Is your relationship with God the most important thing about you? As you follow God, as you pursue God, your family will follow. So, a dad who builds leaders has a personal relationship with God. Secondly, we see that a dad who builds leaders cares about his family. You notice, and we see this, I'll come back to this in a minute, but you know, Elkanah had two wives, and the one had children. Hannah, of course, didn't, and so there was this distress on the part of Hannah, because certainly in those days, it was probably of vital importance that a woman had children. That was, you know, I guess if we could say it this way, that was her primary role, right? To have children. And so for a wife who didn't bear children, this was a great shame. And we see that. We see Hannah experiencing that here. And we see Elkanah notice that. He realizes that. He pays attention to it. You see, he goes into her. In verse 7, we see, we're told that Hannah wept and she wouldn't eat. And Elkanah, her husband, verse 8, we're told, goes to her and says, "Why do you weep? Why do you not eat? Why is your heart sad?" So he sees. He pays attention. He knows that something's going on with his wife. So I think the point here is, dads, husbands, we have to pay attention. We have to care about our families. And again, that seems self-evident. As a leader, you have to care about the people that you're leading. But in the home, You know, unfortunately, I think sometimes we see dads, we see husbands, maybe, you know, let's not even say intentionally, it's just that because of this culture in which we live and the messages that we give men about their role, what is the primary role of a man in the home? Make money. Support the family. And so we see men oftentimes spending their time, their energy, putting their attention on their career. I ran across this story that makes the point well. A young man was to be sentenced to the penitentiary, and the judge had known him from childhood, for he was well acquainted with his father, a famous legal scholar and the author of an exhaustive study entitled The Law of Trusts. "Do you remember your father?" asked the judge. "I remember him well, Your Honor," came the reply. Then, trying to probe the offender's conscience, the judge said, "As you are about to be sentenced, and as you think of your wonderful dad, what do you remember most clearly about him?" There was a pause. Then the judge received an answer he had not expected. "I remember when I went to him for advice. He looked up at me from the book he was writing and said, 'Run along, boy, I'm busy.' When I went to him for companionship, he turned me away, saying, 'Run along, son, this book must be finished.' Your Honor, you remember him as a great lawyer. I remember him as a lost friend." The judge muttered to himself, "Alas, finished the book, but lost the boy." You see, as dads, as husbands, we have to pay attention to our families. We have to pay attention to our children, to our wives, to what's going on in the home. Yeah, it's important for us to support the family financially, but it's just as, if not more important, to support the family as we see Elkanah do here emotionally. Are you sensitive to where your wife is, to where your children are emotionally? Do you pay attention to that? Do you see it? Do you see when your wife's struggling, when one of your children is struggling? That requires an investment of time, right? That requires an investment of, let's just say it, energy. Because frankly, us guys sometimes aren't that great at reading things, especially when it comes to emotions. And we have to focus on it. We have to be intentional about it. Because if it were up to us, you know, even if we thought that there was something off, I mean, I know I do this. I don't know about you guys. And I'm working hard not to do it, but I think Michelle would say I still at times do it. I can tell something's off with her, but it's like, I don't want to get involved in that. You know, that just takes too much energy and time. I got other things I have to be worried about. Yeah, I've done that, unfortunately. That's not what a leader does, and that's not what a father who builds leaders does. He does what we see Elkanah do here. He knew there was something wrong with Hannah. And he went to her, and he talked with her, and he did his best to comfort her. So, second principle of building leaders, the role of fathers. We have to care about our family. Next, in terms of dads building leaders, a dad has to be proactive and not passive. We see Elkanah here, you know, in addition to going to his wife and trying to comfort her, we also see, we're told that he gives these what are referred to as portions, and we're not exactly sure what those are, probably given to the women to sacrifice on their own during this festival. And so in verse 4, we see that on the day when Elkanah sacrificed, he would give portions to Peninnah, his wife, and to all her sons and daughters. But to Hannah, he gave a double portion because he loved her, though the Lord had closed her womb. So it isn't just that Elkanah saw that there was something wrong with Hannah. He was active. He did something for her. He was involved in her life. This issue of passivity, and I think I've talked about this before, I've mentioned it before. Passivity, I think, is the number one challenge for men. And we're talking about in the home, okay? Most men, I suppose we would say, especially successful men in the workplace, are not passive. And don't struggle with passivity. That's how they become leaders in the workplace, right? But when they get home, what happens? they become passive. And as I said, I think I've talked about this before, but all you have to do to kind of understand this is go back to Genesis chapter 3. For some reason, and this is one of the big questions I have for God when I get to heaven, why did he make us this way? For some reason, God put this challenge in us guys from the beginning. Because if you go back to Genesis chapter 3, you see this story of Satan tempting Eve. And God had given the command to Adam, right? Don't eat from this one tree. You can eat the fruit from any other tree, but not from this one. Satan comes and tempts Eve. Where's Adam when that's going on? Well, the Bible specifically tells us he was there with her. And what did he do? When he saw that Eve was going to eat this fruit that God said, don't eat, he didn't do anything. He was passive. And you see, that's before the fall. That's how God has made us. You know, I suppose to some extent, ladies, we apologize, but God made us this way. That's not an excuse, though, right? I mean, we're called really to put our energy into fighting against that, to not be passive in the home. And so that requires, you know, it's kind of tied to the one that I just mentioned. That requires being engaged, noticing what's going on, knowing. And here's the thing. I don't know. I guess Michelle tells me I can't talk about myself too much in these sermons, but there are times when the illustrations are just so clear to me because I fall so far short. I think of the number of times when, I don't know, for instance, people will say, you know, we're planning a meal or something, or we're planning an event together with someone else, and maybe the husband will come and say, oh, we've got something planned with you, right? We've got this date on the calendar. And I say something like, oh, I don't know, I just do what my wife tells me. I suspect that probably drives her crazy when I say that. Because that's really passive, you know, just to kind of say, oh, I don't know what's going on, I just do whatever my wife tells me. That's not what I'm supposed to be doing as a husband and a father. I should know. Here's the thing, guys. Do you know what's on the schedule this week for your family? I don't mean just for you. I mean for your family. Do you know what's on the schedule for your kids? Do you know what your wife has planned for this week? You have to be engaged to know those things. Do you know, this is even more difficult, do you know what your children are struggling with right now? Do you know what they're concerned about? Do you know who their, a way to put it might be, who their rivals are? Because, you know, our kids always have these rivals, right? Dads, do you know who they are? You need to get engaged. You have to be proactive, as Elkanah was. Ask questions. Spend time. Again, put the energy into it. This is what it takes to build leaders in the home. Dad has to be engaged. He has to be proactive and not passive. And then finally, we see that in order for a dad to build leaders, he has to be a man of, and we'll just say it this way, a man of integrity, but not perfection. You see, one of the things that we're told about Elkanah here, as I mentioned a few minutes ago, is that he had two wives, right? And what happened as a result of him having two wives? It's interesting when you see this topic of polygamy, which we see so often in the Old Testament. We really don't necessarily see the Bible say yes or no to polygamy, at least directly, other than, of course, in Genesis chapter 2, where we're told that one man is supposed to have one wife for one life. But then we see all these examples of polygamy. And in every case, I don't think it's a stretch to say this, in every case where there's polygamy, there are problems, right? There are problems. Now we don't, at least in this part of the country, we don't necessarily struggle with polygamy, right? But what do we struggle with that's similar? Serial marriages, where we have these blended family situations. And, you know, I again, in counseling, I encounter this oftentimes where a couple comes to me and they're trying to blend a family together. And I often find myself asking this question, well, if you could set aside the issues that you're having with the children that you're trying to blend into a family, if you could set those things aside, how's your relationship? Well, our relationship as husband and wife is great, but dealing with these kids. And see, here's the thing. I guess just a side point here. You can't expect really anything different than that. Just as Elkanah could not have expected anything other than problems when he had two wives. Because this is not God's plan. This is not God's design. And so when we try to do something contrary to God's design, it's going to cause problems. It doesn't mean we can't get through it, right? And as we see here with Elkanah, you know, I'm back to the point I'm trying to make. He was not a perfect father. Yeah, there were several things about him we see that were good, but he wasn't perfect. None of us are perfect. And we're not going to get it right all the time. We just have to admit when we get it wrong. I think that's one of the biggest things for us guys. That's, again, a challenge. I mean, guys, when was the last time you went to one of your children and said, I was wrong. I shouldn't have done that. I shouldn't have said that. Or maybe I shouldn't have said what I did in the way that I did. Please forgive me. How often do you say that to your kids, to your wife? Do you admit when you're wrong and ask for forgiveness? That's, I suppose, what I mean by being a man of integrity. Admitting when you're wrong, because you're not going to get it right all the time. And you need to model. You need to model grace. You need to model asking for forgiveness. You need to model the fact that you believe in forgiveness. And you don't see yourself as perfect. And you rely on God's grace. Our kids need to see that. Our wives need to see that. So it's not about being perfect. It's simply about being a man of integrity. All right? So that's the men. Now let's turn to our wives. And I guess maybe because I'm a man and not a woman, this is going to be shorter than for the guys. But I'll do my best here. Because I always hesitate. You know, I hate to tell you ladies what to do, you know, because I'm no expert in what it takes to be a mom or a wife. But let's just see what we're told about Hannah. There are a few things that we know about being a mom. And, you know, we start with this in terms of being a mom. I saw this story and I love it because I know this is my mom and I know this is Michelle, the mom to my kids. A teacher was trying to teach a young student about math. And she said to him, okay, imagine this. Imagine that your mom bakes a pie and there are seven of you in the family. There are five kids and mom and dad. How much of that pie are you going to get? And the young man, without any hesitation, said, 1/6. And the teacher said, no, that's not right. There are seven of you. And the little boy said, yeah, I know, but my mom would say, oh, I don't need any. You all can have it. That's moms, right? They give. They just have this, something that I don't think us guys have. They have this natural ability to be self-sacrificing. And that's what we love about our moms, right? But here are some things that we see in terms of a mom's role in building leaders in the home. And the first, which is pretty obvious, is that a mom prays. You know, we see Hannah here praying. She prays, and she prays diligently. And she prays with emotion. You know, you've seen, I'm sure, many stories about people who say, you know, I finally was saved, and I believe it's because my mom prayed for me. And my mom continued to pray for me, right? I think it's so important. It's not that it's unimportant for us guys to pray, but I think it's so important for moms to pray because here's the thing. Moms seem to have this sense. Do you know what I mean? We call it, what, a woman's intuition? And I think that's real, even though I try to ignore it when my wife says, I don't know, but I just think this. I just feel this way. I don't like hearing that because I need evidence, right? I need logic. And she says, well, I just have this feeling. And most of the time she's right. God has given women, He's given wives, moms, this ability to sense what their kids need, what their husbands need, even if there's no evidence for it, even if there's no logic to it. And so He gives them that ability, I think, to a large extent, so they'll pray. Because oftentimes there's nothing they can do about it, right? Other than what Hannah did here. Pray. And here's the next thing we see about Hannah, and that's important for a mom. Persistence. I mean, Hannah didn't just pray. We're told she continued in prayer. And again, I think we see this naturally in moms. I mean, it's difficult, if not impossible, to find an example of a mom who gave up on her kids, right? I mean, all the examples that we see, even in these guys who are criminals who do the worst things, what do we often see on TV? Who is it that we see talking about, oh, this is really a good person? Mom, right? Because mom never gives up. And I'm sure most of us have experienced that. Our moms never give up on us. That's what you're called to, ladies, to be persistent. Even if you don't know what it is you're supposed to be doing sometimes, you don't know how you're supposed to do it, just don't give up and trust that God will be with you through it. And then finally, we see a mom's role in leadership is preparation. At the end of the story, we see after Samuel is born and Elkanah again goes up to Shiloh to worship, what does Hannah do? She stays home with the child and prepares him. But here's the thing. What's she preparing him for? She's preparing to leave him at the temple. She's preparing to send him on his way. This, moms, I know, is the hardest part of being a mom. And I say I know because I've seen it. To let your kids go. We have this term these days, helicopter parents, right? Helicopter moms. Michelle and I were a little bit afraid that we were becoming that with Lucas when he transferred to Franklin College. We were considering moving to Franklin, not because he was there, but just because we wanted to move to Franklin. We eventually did, but thankfully it was after he left Franklin College. But we see this with parents these days, and as I said, we've come up with this terminology, parents who won't let their kids go. They just want to stay with them and in their lives all the time, rather than do what they've been called to do, which is prepare to launch them on their own. That's your job, Mom. Prepare them and let them go. And I know that's hard. That's what God's called you to do. And that's what we see. I mean, you think that's hard. Imagine Hannah here. You know, it's not just that she did this, but look at when she did it. She did it when we think probably, we're not told specifically, but it would appear to us that it was Samuel was maybe in the age of 3 or 4 years old. I mean, imagine that, launching a child that early in life. But she did it without hesitation because she knew that was her role in building this leader, Samuel, to prepare him during that time that she had him and then to let him go because that's what God called her to do. So, moms, your role is to prepare and launch. Now, let me just finish with this. This is kind of, I guess, in the way of a footnote, but I think especially after this kind of a message, it's important to have this footnote, and we see it right here in the text. Back to this rivalry between Peninnah, these names in the Old Testament, I tell you. Peninnah and Hannah, they had this rivalry. And what are we told about Hannah? You know, not just that she felt bad because she didn't have a child. When is it that she felt the worst? When she went to the temple. when she was with God's people. She didn't even eat. She felt so bad. And you see, my point here is that when we have messages like this, when we talk about, oh, this is what a godly husband is, this is what a godly mother is, this is how we're supposed to be as parents, we all kind of have this tendency to think in our heads, that's not me. We can see so easily where we fall short. And we feel, I think, oftentimes, unfortunately, condemned. Because we know that we don't live up to that standard, right? And then, you know, we go out here in the coffee shop, if you're at a big church, into the lobby, and we talk to people on Sunday morning, and what do they say? What do they tell us about their lives? Oh, it's all good. Everything's together, you know. My family's great. My life's great. Because no one ever admits, especially in church, nobody admits that they're struggling, right? And so the place where we're supposed to get the greatest comfort, surrounded by God's people who are worshiping God together, the place where we're supposed to feel God's love the most, we oftentimes, like Hannah, feel it the least. What do we do about that? Well, I think primarily, we just have to be honest. Honest with each other. Yeah, what I've talked about here, for fathers, for mothers, this is the standard that God's given us. But again, none of us are perfect. And we're not going to live up to this all of the time. Even maybe most of the time. We simply rely on God, His Spirit living in us, and His grace flowing to us daily to sustain us when we fail. That's the best that we can do. And then we turn, especially in this family, to those that are here and do our best to be honest. You know, the next time somebody asks you, how are you doing? Now, look, I'm going to limit this to the next time somebody who is a brother or sister in Christ asks you that, okay? Because it can be difficult to kind of share the realities with someone who doesn't know God. But if they do, I challenge you, the next time they ask you, be honest. Because it could just be that this person is struggling with the same thing you are. And that by being open, by admitting where you are, you can help them get through what they're going through. Maybe even the two of you can do it together. That's why God's brought us into community together, to help each other, to encourage each other. So, I guess I would just conclude by saying this. My prayer more than anything else is a result of this. That's kind of the point, more than anything else, actually, that got my attention in this first chapter. Just how sad it is that Hannah felt the worst when she was with God's people. Let's not have that happen here. All right? Let's encourage each other. Let's support each other. Let's be honest. Let's close in prayer. Heavenly Father, we love these stories that you've given us of your people from days of old. We're grateful that you have saved these, that you have captured these events for us and put them into a form that we can read and study and do our best to understand. And as we've seen how you begin to form leadership for the nation of Israel through Samuel, I pray for all of us here today that you would show us maybe something that we need to focus our energy on as dads or moms, as husbands or wives. Help us to look in our own homes and how it is that we're doing at being a leader and forming leaders in our homes. But as we've said, Lord, more than anything else, I pray for us as a church family here that you would, first of all, just encourage each one of us as a result of this message. Help us not go away from here feeling condemned or feeling that we fall short of the standard that you've set for us. Help us instead
to be encouraged by the fact that you've given us instruction and direction, that we don't have to go through this great task of parenting, this task of being a spouse, without guidance and instruction. You've made it clear to us. And so help us to be encouraged by that. And even when we fall short, help us to turn quickly to you and admit and seek your, first of all, forgiveness, and then your grace to sustain us and help us to get back at the task that you've called us to. And may we as well in this place especially be honest with each other about where we are, about what's going on with our lives, about the struggles that we've had this past week, about the struggles that we look forward to this week, so that we can pray for each other, so that we can help each other, so that we can be an encouragement to each other. Lord, may this be the place that we come to each week, that we feel your love the most, that we feel your encouragement the most, that we feel your grace the most through each other. In Jesus' name we pray.